Good morning. Welcome to session 143. This is implementing a healthcare data warehouse in 1 year or less. My name is Bill Orovich. I am a part of the strategic advisory group of Santa Rosa Consulting. I'm very happy to serve as your moderator for this session. I'd like to take a moment also to welcome our virtual attendees and thank them for their participation. Okay, today, this presentation describes a spiral lifecycle project strategy coupled with a flexible database design that completes implementation in 1 year or less while enabling rapid subsequent expansions and upgrades. I'd like to welcome our speaker, Dr. Richard Beal, who will provide us with more information on this topic. Dr. Beal comes to us from Orlando, Florida, at the University of Central Florida, Department of Health Management and Informatics. Dr. Beal has been a data warehouse, has been data warehousing for just over 30 years, but has only been in healthcare for the past six, and he would never go back. Having implemented clinical warehouses in six healthcare institutions, he sees a design and project pattern that anyone can adopt. It's not as hard as many people make it out to be. His goal today is to present that pattern so that you can go home and do it yourself. So please join me in extending a warm welcome to our speaker, Dr. Beal.
Thank you very much. While I think of myself primarily as an educator, in the interest of disclosure, I also conduct a consulting practice where I actually do a lot of this. So just to let you know, there's nothing in my presentation that would require you to retain me or necessarily contact me in any way, although I will invite you to do so when the time comes. Our learning objectives today are really not so much what I want you just to learn, but what I want you to go home and do. Okay, so I'm hoping you're here to actually go home and do the things we're going to talk about. Go home and implement a warehouse or some large-scale informatics initiative in your organization. So we're going to talk about how to build a small team to go home and do that. You don't want too big a team. We want to know how to identify the database and the functional dependencies that tend to create bottlenecks that delay implementation very often. We want to plan a multi-iteration process because we want to deliver functionality pretty consistently. I'd like to do this whole project in a year or less, but I want to deliver something roughly every quarter while I'm doing that. I want to be able to talk about some of the organizational resources you're going to need to be able to pull this off, because doing it in a year is complicated but not complex. You've got to align the stars a little bit. So we're going to talk about the things that would go wrong that might prevent you from achieving that goal. And then within the context of doing this fairly quickly, it's going to be important to talk about what kind of data sources or data capabilities you want to load into your warehouse as you go through. I'm assuming that if you came here today, you're already interested, obviously, in data warehousing in some form. You may already be trying to implement something. So I'm not going to talk about a lot of data warehousing per se, but for those of you perhaps who are on the fence or just starting to think about it, I would like to just quickly recap some of the benefits that most of us are looking for when we implement some kind of data warehousing technology in a healthcare setting. First, we're usually looking to create some kind of an integrated data repository. We've got data all over the medical center or all over the hospital or all over our practice. We want to bring that data together. We're looking usually for new access paths into our data. The systems that we tend to have for querying information around a hospital tend to be very patient and encounter focused. So operationally, we can look up patients and encounters very, very quickly without data warehouses. But for those of us looking at geographic mapping or population analysis, or want to do disease monitoring, those kinds of things are very difficult to do. Facilities management and utilization, things that aren't organized by patient and encounter. The data is in our systems, but we can't often get it out that way, so we want to look at new access paths. We're probably all interested in some kind of data quality improvement and enhancing the quality of our materials. If you go out to the proceedings for various HIMSS conferences, data quality was the topic of my HIMSS 08 talk, so those materials are available specifically on data quality. We're usually looking at early access paths into very complicated data. Increasingly, we're finding that Data warehouses aren't just about the data in our EMRs and in our clinical systems, but we have lots of new systems coming online that are presenting new data challenges that we don't have historical reporting capabilities against. Increasingly, sites are going with clinical trial management, things of that nature, where there's a whole host of new data they want to bring on fairly quickly. What many of us are interested in is semantic pathways and the idea of semantic interoperability as we start to gather information through HIEs from organizations that don't necessarily speak in the codes that we speak about. If you're interested in semantic interoperability in a warehouse, that was the topic of my HIMSS 10 presentations. You can go back to the proceedings to get a lot more detail about that. And then lastly, many of us are starting to look beyond the simple disease and phenotype data to get into some of the lab management and genomic and proteomic and regulomic data. And all these new data sources coming in, and we need that longitudinal view of data as we go forward. So for one or many of those reasons, you're probably considering or already attempting some kind of a data warehousing initiative in your organization. So let's talk about how to do that and do it fairly quickly. Okay, so we have to talk a little about the resources you're going to put on it in terms of human resource. This is probably the key to being successful very quickly, is putting together the data governance and support teams necessary to support your project. So first, let's look at the project team itself. My recommendation, based on my experience, is 3 to 5 people will usually do the job. If I have the option to go smaller or larger, I'll usually choose to go smaller, because faster usually doesn't get associated with bigger teams. So putting together a very large team, thinking you can do it faster, I find doesn't tend to pay off. It becomes a drag on the project. And we'll talk a little about why as we go through some of the design patterns itself for the warehouse. But there's not a lot of volume that you can assign to a lot of people as you go through this process. But you will need some kind of a data warehouse architect, someone who can architect your entire solution as you go through, some kind of business or data or clinical analyst who can analyze and understand the data, some ETL developers to build the ETL necessary to load the warehouse, and some kind of an application developer in some Java-like or Perl-type language, because there's always various small utilities to be written in the warehouse initiative for maintaining dimensions of the warehouse that aren't necessarily sourced from your source systems. So that blend of a team, if it's in fact 3 to 5 people, they might be very distinct roles. If you go as small as 1 to 2 people, then obviously people are going to share those roles. But you've got to make sure all 4 of these roles are strongly assigned and placed into the project team, dedicated to doing this. So if you're serious about doing a data warehouse in a year or less, put together this team and don't ask them to do anything else for the next year. We're talking a very dedicated team as they go through. We also need a support network to work with them. So typically there's a series of support roles that have to be played. And if you don't staff these support roles adequately, the project team gets bogged down trying to do this for themselves. But typically it's a collection of people who are assigned perhaps as much as 10 hours a week, a quarter of their time, for the duration of the project to be available to support the team, someone to do project management and database administration, someone to do data administration, someone to deal with the HL7 integration that most organizations struggle with, because those resources in most hospitals are very isolated within IT, and making them available to the warehousing project can be a challenge. Someone to do the business intelligence design and whatever tools you have available for your end-user query environment. And an organizational change agent. The data warehouse does, in fact, represent change. You're trying to get the organization to go from thinking in terms of operational data to truly moving up to an organizational informatics role. And that's a cultural change for the organization. A big pitfall of building a warehouse quickly is if you don't go through the organizational change, you'll have a great warehouse and you'll have nobody really ready to use it. You've got to have these resources available. When I talk about having these resources available quarter time, keep in mind the project is moving very, very quickly. If I call my HL7 specialist on Monday and say, I've got some questions about how you remove duplicates or redundancies in your AO8 transactions, and what I hear is, I can see you Thursday afternoon, this project is not going to be done in a year. So while these people don't have to be full-time, they do have to be dedicated to the project. I like to say they have to virtually drop anything else they're doing if this project calls on them, so that they're virtually on the project team the entire time. Otherwise, the one-year time frame just doesn't happen. A key role for the organizational change agent is to help organize and manage the data governance group. Data governance is a very, very important function. It's usually vastly overlooked by organizations I see building data warehouses. But someone to bring in the voice of the customer, to make sure that organizational issues get addressed in a timely fashion, that we have owners and stewards for all the different systems coming into the data warehouse, that they focus on defining how to enhance the quality of what goes into the warehouse, and they promote innovative uses. This is a very, very important group. If you don't have a good data governance group, you will successfully build a warehouse. And when people look at it, they will feel like they are looking at all the data in your systems. If you have an effective data governance group, you'll build an effective data warehouse. And when people look at it, they'll feel they're looking at what was happening on the units and to the patients and in the operating theaters. A huge difference whether this is an IT solution or a true informatics clinical solution for your organization. The difference isn't IT, it's governance. So make sure you're focused on that data governance group as you go through. So if you've got the right resources in place, you can then kick off your project. The challenge then is to eliminate the bottlenecks that would cause this project to take a long time. A lot of data warehouse projects that I see or get involved in typically run 2 to 3 years before they implement something, and that's just too long for organizations to wait. Most data warehouses can save an organization millions of dollars a year. And if I delay 2 years on my implementation, I've thrown away $3 or $4 million of benefit that I want to get right now. So we want our warehouse up and running fairly quickly, and it really means dedicating ourselves to it. In the traditional life cycle, we focus on our analysis and our database design and our ETL build and our query design, and you'll approach that with names of phases that might be very, very different. But the point is we tend to follow a life cycle that has a lot of functional dependencies in it. A lot of the process is dependent upon the analysis, which unfortunately is the hardest part. Even in a 1-year initiative, it's the hardest part. You don't want the entire project dependent on that. So we want to figure out some way to get rid of some of these strong functional dependencies. Now, this isn't going to be a technical presentation, but just to highlight the ways we do that, you've got to get in your architecture the database design to be independent of your organization. So what we've done over the years is we've tried to finalize some kind of a standard data model structure. I'm a star schema dimension bigot. I definitely build dimensional data warehouses. So if you're looking at any others, I'm not very good for helping you. But in terms of a star schema model, it works extremely well precisely because we can normalize the dimensions independently of the data that will use them. In fact, if you build your data warehouse to store just the data in your systems, you'll never have the interoperability you're going to look for in the future with your HIEs and your patient portals and things of that nature. So if you really want to be able to integrate with data in the future that today you haven't even identified, the safest way to do it is to make sure you don't pin your database design to the data you have today. So get your data design in place. If you read the literature of data warehousing, I tend to follow the writings of Ralph Kimball, who developed a lot of the star schema paradigms that were in use in the 1990s, and they've matured since then. But I basically build Kimball-like warehouses. So I design a certain number of dimensions in the warehouse, which will tend to vary. A hospital-only warehouse, for instance, if you go back to my HIMSS 08 presentation, you'll see a 15-dimension clinical warehouse in a hospital setting. If you look at my HIMSS 10 presentation, by then I was doing more of the genomic work in tandem with the clinical work, and I had 25 dimensions in it. So 15 to 25 dimensions is probably the ballpark you're going to be looking at as you see your way through. And if you're following a Kimball-like model, it's possible to have a design pattern of just 6 tables per dimension. Okay? Every dimension is the same. Every dimension has the same 6 tables. Users can learn to query them fairly conveniently, although there's some training challenges there. But because we standardize the database design, we don't have to wait to start building the warehouse and its ETL until the analysis is done. They'll be able to run in parallel, and that's where a lot of the savings comes from. I'm going in a year. The other thing is that once you've generalized your database, you don't want to build a separate ETL stream from every source all the way to the warehouse. The warehouse is a very standard structure, and therefore the ETL design and architecture can be standardized and made completely independent of the source data structures. So between a standardization of the database design and the standardization of the ETL architecture, there's nothing in the design of the warehouse that is actually dependent upon any knowledge of the structure or content of the source systems, which really means you've eliminated the functional dependency. And while analysis is still the big piece of the model, it can now run parallel to the database design, the ETL, and the query. So notice that here in the lower query, we've trimmed off some time. The amount of time we've trimmed off varies, but typically you're going from the top picture of 2 to 3 years to the bottom picture of 1 year or less. The fastest I've seen it done is about 7 months. To the extent that you will go over a year, it will be for the reasons we're about to talk about as we go through. The database design is now a very, very small task. It's really just the local tuning and performance and environmental issues for your environment. The logical data model is very, very constrained right now. And there is no ETL design anymore. It's a very fixed construct, a very fixed architecture. So we've gone from spending a lot of time designing and building ETL to simply continuously building it for the sources that come in the future. So the time frame is very much shorter. The kind of time frame I like to think in terms of is imagine starting the project on January 1st. When will I have deliverables as I go through this process? Well, I like to have an alpha version, the first working version, sometime by the end of January. So within the first month, I want to have my alpha version up and running. And if you've got a data set available, you can have a proof of concept running the first week. By the end of the first week of January, I'd like to have something loaded and available for running queries to a knowledgeable user, obviously. So often it's a data set that's lying around, a year's worth of allergen data, a year's worth of disease history or diagnostic history, some file that's lying around with 100,000 to 500,000 facts in it can usually be loaded in the first week of the process, and you'll grow that to millions by the end of January. If you're on that track, then you go to your beta version by the middle of March. So by spring, I want to have a serious beta version of the warehouse running in the environment and my gamma version running by Labor Day. So you'll have to rescale the time frame based, obviously, on when your project starts. But the goal is to go live with a fully functional warehouse by the end of the year. So that alpha version is really very, very primitive. It's something I'm only throwing together fairly quickly. It implements just enough of the core capabilities to demonstrate what you're trying to do. Okay? If your project's going to last 3 years, you can spend the first 3 to 6 months educating people about what you're doing, because it's going to be 2 more years before they're going to see it anyway. If you want to go live in 1 year, you've got to start orienting and socializing these concepts into your organization fairly quickly. And even if people are used to thinking about databases to run queries, they're probably not thinking about dimensional data warehouses that combine a lot of data. So if you really want to show people what you're doing, build something and show it to them. You know, let them sit down and write some queries against that first alpha version, which means you've got to avoid any HIPAA issues in that alpha version, the data you load, because we haven't built any controls yet. But some fairly generic de-identified data can usually make the point as we go through. So, like I said, 3 to 4 weeks for development on the alpha, sometimes a proof of concept as early as the first week. When the proof of concept isn't done in the first week, it's usually because nobody could come up with some data that they would load in that kind of time frame. They didn't want to get diverted just looking for a proof of concept data set. You might be willing to wait the 3 or 4 weeks, depending on how long you've already been waiting. Once the alpha is running, then you move on to the beta version. This one has most of the required functionality. We do a full ETL build. We build out all the dimensions that are part of the internals of the warehouse. It really helps us facilitate the planning and the setup. You start to get a feel for how many ETL jobs there will be, what we're going to do with them in the job scheduler, how we'll integrate the warehouse into our disaster recovery. There are a lot of planning activities that on a 3-year project might wait until into the second or third year. We don't have that kind of luxury here. You've got to start the day one of the project, you've got to act as though you're trying to get into production. Because in most of your environments, it takes that long to get a fairly major system into production, going through change control and things of that nature. So this particular version is fairly robust, but it is still a show and tell for the users. As a project team will show the warehouse to a lot of people, I won't be having my user community log on and use the warehouse at this point. There's a lot of controls that are still missing. But there's a lot more data now. Usually we're talking 25 to 50 million facts in the beta version. We start to look at a fairly substantial load that people can really start to do some fairly serious queries as they go through. And then we move on to the gamma version. Again, if we started in January, we're going to aim for Labor Day to have the gamma version done. Here we're talking typically a lot more functionality. We're not really loading out all the data yet. People are anxious to get to the data, but data takes time. It eats up a lot of the resource of your project team. So we want to make sure we have all the function correct. So you spend a lot of the summer really focusing on HIPAA. A warehouse that doesn't deal with HIPAA issues ends up being pretty useless. You can spend the year loading hundreds of millions of facts into the warehouse, only to find that 90% of them are protected by HIPAA because they're large text blocks and we don't know what's in them. So there's no point in building a warehouse that is write only. The point is to build a warehouse that can be read and used and queried by people. So you've got to spend the summer really focusing a great deal on your HIPAA controls and getting that data governance group up and running so that they can provide the kind of guidance you need on that version. And then finally, by the end of the year, you want to go live with Release 1. Release 1 is a fully functional operational warehouse. All the data you've scoped for the first release has been loaded up to your cutoff date, and the ETL and the loads necessary to keep them current on an ongoing basis are ready to be placed in production and moved. Whenever these projects don't finish in a year, it's usually these last couple of steps that drag on. The good news is the gamma version is often very, very usable. You start to get some immediate benefits, although the project team gets consumed in it because it's not really ready for prime time. But you do start to get some benefits as soon as you've got the gamma version. But if you've got a good governance team and support team in place, the hiccups that tend to cause the release 1 to fail can usually be addressed. And often there are issues outside the warehouse. There are the ability to have a testing and production environment up and running on your servers, and ability to have all your database licenses in place, and ability to have all your users have whatever licenses are needed for the business intelligence environment you're going to give them to. So if those issues haven't been addressed proactively over the course of the year, you kind of run into an operational wall around the end of the year. Okay? So we've really been talking about some kind of iterative parallelism here. Let's get this process going. Let's make analysis, ETL, and query design just run iteratively from our alpha version in January through our beta version in March to our gamma version in September and to our production release at the end of the year. So that's the good news. The bad news is for a lot of us that's not actually going to happen. There are barriers in our environment that have to be addressed. A lot of stars have to align to make that happen in 1 year. It's doable, but not automatic. So the issues that tend to come up that will interfere with your strategy and that you want to address very proactively, one of the most important is the knowledge of the source data. Do the people on the team either have strong knowledge of the source data, or do they have timely access to people that do? If you can't get in there and figure out what's happening in the systems, you're not going to load the data correctly in the warehouse. And this is not a straight IT function. I can look at the database and see what kind of rows get created in my EMR. I can look in the database and see what fields get populated when I do an A34 patient merge. That's very different than talking to the people that do patient merges to find out what's really going on when they do them. How often do you do them? How often do you undo them? What are the processes that you go through? So it's more than just looking at the database. Don't treat these as IT challenges. They are truly analytical, organizational challenges as you go through. There's also the challenge of looking at history data versus prospective data, the data going forward. For most data warehouses, the first data we load tends to be kind of the mass history load. Let's go get 3 years of encounter data. Let's go get a couple of years of diagnosis data. And a lot of people spend way too much time focusing on their historical data, only to find that when they move on to prospective data, which usually shifts them from table extracts into a mode of looking perhaps at HL7 messages on a daily basis, they find that the prospective data models differently than the history data. And if you're not careful, you'll end up with two different ways of loading the warehouse. The data that's loaded prospectively will be slightly askew compared to the data that was loaded historically. You end up with a seam in the data, where users have to know what is happening at that scene. We went live on January 1st, so any query that looks before that has to be written this way, and any query after that has to be written that way. You don't want that kind of a scene. You want a seamless environment. So the best thing your team can do is do the analysis and the modeling of prospective data first. Make sure you understand how you're going to load data on a day-to-day basis going forward, and then do your historical analysis with that result in mind. Make the history look like it had arrived prospectively. So a user writing a query across a vast span of time doesn't have to worry about what the implementation date of the warehouse was. They've got a completely seamless view back into their historical data. Another big problem we run into is access to source data structures. Most warehouse projects eventually are given the access on the servers and in the security system to get to the data that they need. But you're not going to finish the project in a year if it gets 6 months to get permission and access to your EMR mirror site. You've got to get access fairly quickly. If you don't have access, you can't load data. Like I said, we're trying to load a lot of data in the first 3 months of the project. So if you make the team jump through hoops for 4 or 5 months to get authorization to access some of these servers, you're not going to make a year. So make sure you're addressing the issue of giving the team the access that they need. You've also got the issue of data capture tools and conversion tools. You may not have today all the tools you need for the data warehouse. Most clinical systems that we have in our hospitals already speak HL7. There's no universal HL7 tool that automatically loads data into warehouses. You'll be going out and finding some kind of a tool that will internalize HL7 messages to turn them into a format that your ETL can process. Some ETL tools can handle XML and some can't, so you might or might not need an XML converter. There are various tools you will need in your environment that are not warehousing tools per se, but the warehousing project might be the first project that needed them. So you might have this whole subtext of having to go out and find some tools you've never had to use before, and that alone can take some time to evaluate and license and bring some of these tools in-house. And unfortunately, we need them the first month, not the 12th month. So that process has to be very, very proactive as you go through. There's also the issue of system time versus clinical time. And this is an issue your governance group should look at, not your IT group. You've got to decide in advance. Are we building a warehouse where the timestamp on the transactions will be the system timestamp in the source, or will it truly be the clinical timestamp of the event as it happened to the patient? And that's a very fine line in some cases. It's one of the reasons you want to model your prospective data first. Your HL7 messages give you much better timestamps than your historical databases. You don't want the timestamp in the EMR record where it was updated by the IT system. If that's all you've got, it's what you've got to grab, but it's not what you want. But make sure that distinction is clear, because in your user training, you've got to let people know which timestamps and dates you tended to capture as you brought your data in. The physical operating environment becomes an issue for most organizations. I've already hinted at that. You've got to have a development and a test and a production environment up and running fairly early in the process. You're going to be putting your alpha version into that test environment as early as late January. You can't spend 6 to 9 months organizing your servers, getting your hardware, having the network connections made, authenticating it, putting in all your security. You just can't do that. You've got to get things up and running fairly quickly. So hopefully you've got an environment. Now, the reality is, because the process is fairly phased, those environments that you work with in March and in January and as late as, say, June or July don't necessarily have to be the final environments, but they do have to be working environments that can be realistically worked in by the team, even if late in the year you start migrating to what will become the final operational environment of your site. You've got to have those kinds of things up and running fairly quickly. You'll also run into issues of query performance. The timings and the memory requirements and the indexing of the database are really the only parts of the database design that remain to be done beyond the standard logical design. So if your DBAs have not worked with star schema dimensional models before, send them some training fairly early. The way you tune the performance of a dimensional warehouse is not the same way you would tune the performance of an operational data store, even if you've got a DBA that's very experienced in the database technology you choose to use. Some of the performance issues you'll implement in a warehouse could actually be contraindicated to the real performance improvements you would want in a star schema. So don't assume because your DBAs have years of experience that they're necessarily the best suited people to tune your dimensional model. So recognize that they're going to need training and they're going to need opportunities to learn what you're doing at the same time. So those are some of the internal project issues you're going to run into time and time again. You've also got to deal with what kind of data do we want to load? We're going to clearly be opportunistic. You can't load data you don't have. You don't want to load data nobody's going to use. And you're going to probably try to please a whole bunch of stakeholders. But in my experience, this list turns out to be a pretty reliable list for the kinds of data you want to have loaded by the time you get to that release one. A lot of admission, discharge, transfer data of your patients. You need your foundation of patients and encounters. It's hard to load a clinical warehouse and not load patients and encounters, obviously. And then moving on to diagnoses and procedures, which tend to be standard query constraints that people want to build on most of their early queries. Problem sets and allergies, which are potentially a subset of that, usually come from a different source. Get that data loaded fairly early. And then most people want to start looking at lab orders and results and med orders and administrations fairly quickly. So to the extent that I can get those loaded, this really is the bread and butter of most release one warehouses. If you have to shorten that list because of timing, you can. The logical design of this standard paradigm is such that it takes us a year to get into release one, but we've established a pace where by March of the second year we could be putting in more and going to a release 1.1. So if in release one you don't get all of this data, don't worry too much. It's a fairly fast process. You really want to put in more data every quarter on an ongoing basis after the first project's done. So having a really exhaustive list in release one is less important than you would think if you're in a paradigm where let's take what we get now because it could be years before we get more. We really do want to cycle through this data fairly quickly as we go through. Sources you want to avoid during the first year. Not that you don't want the data, but they do tend to bog down the project. Watch out for the large text results, the report sources. It's not that they can't be loaded into the warehouse, it's just that by definition, they identify patients. We don't know the content of large text blocks of data. So we run into HIPAA issues whenever we load this kind of data. Now, there are redaction algorithms and all kinds of things that we can do to make large text data available to a querier. But unless you've already got a fairly strong integration into your IRB and HIPAA organization, which are governance issues, so you want to start dealing with them early, you're actually wasting some time in the first year if you load a lot of that kind of data, because technically you can't show it to anybody. So it becomes a secret warehouse of results we'd be able to show you if only it weren't for HIPAA. You don't want to be in that kind of a mode in a warehouse. So focus to the extent you can on fairly discrete elements or short text blocks. 10 characters is kind of the limit that I go with. I used to go with 5 characters as the limit, but then I couldn't even show the word negative or the color yellow. So I found if I extended it to 10, I can at least show a lot of lab results that I wouldn't see otherwise. But longer text than that, you have to presume, would be HIPAA-constrained. And you've got to get your IRB process moving before you can let people write those queries. So that's rarely something you do in the first year. Also, avoid overly complex data. Again, not because you don't want the data, but because it will bog down the project team. So go through a learning period and discuss things as they go through. An example of complex data might be labor and delivery data for multiple live births, where you've got multiple patients associated with the facts. There aren't a lot of data facts around the hospital that have multiple patients. So while the model can handle it, your team won't have a lot of experience in that during the first year. So I tend to avoid data that's that complex. Even among lab results, your microbiology labs are slightly more complex because they add the dimensionality of the bacterial species and the sensitivity. So the dimension is part of the warehouse, but it's just one more thing for the team to get bogged down in for a relatively low-value, low-volume data initially. I tend to move those things into the second year because of their complexity. But it's really a matter of what your governance team decides they want to do. And that's one of the most important things in your design, is it should not be the IT team deciding what goes in the warehouse. It should be your governance group. So it's fairly safe to start with the ADT data, some diagnosis, some labs, some meds. You know the governance group will want those. But when it comes time to start deciding on the nuances of what do we load next, make sure IT and informatics is not making that decision. Let the user community make that decision as they go through. The governance group really should be focusing on that. So those are kind of issues inside the project. Let's look a little bit at the issues outside the project that will cause you to not finish within a year. One is that it's very difficult to make this one-year time frame real for the people in the organization. It's a real challenge. You've probably done a lot of projects in your organization that took a lot longer than a year to do something as complex and major as a data warehouse. It can be very difficult for the project team to keep trying to talk to users and to talk to analysts and talk to other IT resources to say, I need this information quickly. We're trying to go live in a year. And simply, it's frustrating to get dismissed by the organization as, you know, oh, yeah, year. No way. You're not going to make it. That's a very frustrating position to put your IT team in. If you're going to try to do this, commit yourself to the one-year time frame and react to the project team with some optimism to support what they're trying to do. Don't allow your organizational culture to kind of weigh them down with skepticism. This is a hard thing to do, but it can be done. But it's really tough to do if people in the organization act as though they think it's an unrealistic goal going in. Also, watch out for the extensive lead times on your operational environment. If you've got an environment that doesn't have any servers or memory, and you've got to order those things and maybe set up some new environments. If you've got an IT environment that's about to go through a major database upgrade 3 or 4 months from now, if you've got some things going on in your operational environment that clearly would interrupt this project, then be careful about the one-year window that you pick. At least be willing during some of those periods to put the clock on hold and not count it against that year if the operating environment just isn't available. But most organizations start small enough that the data volumes are low enough through both the alpha and the beta version that most organizations have some server space lying around they can play with out to that level. But don't be blinded by that to not needing to deal with the operational environment. I want to be loading by the release one version something on the order of 500 million to a billion facts based on maybe 2 or 3 years of ADT history, 2 or 3 years of lab history, 2 or 3 years of medications history. I'm going to be loading hundreds of millions of facts more in release one than I had in my beta version. And there's going to be an impact on your operational environment as you go through. Be careful about deferring your access and privacy issues too late. It can be too late to make the data available for people. Make the HIPAA coordinator for your site, make your IRB an active part of your governance group. Make sure you're dealing with those kinds of issues. What kind of data do we want people to see? That 5 or 10 character limit that I just talked about a minute ago, that length should be set by your governance group. So I might set a limit to say, unless the governance group says otherwise, we're going to treat any text field longer than 10 characters as protected data. Well, that will exclude most of the data you would load into the warehouse, that is text. So the challenge over that year is to have the governance group reviewing all the data you plan to load. Maybe there's a 50-character comment in the med administration row you're trying to load. Well, I want to profile that data and show it to the governance group and let them make the call whether that field should be considered HIPAA compliant or not. It's not up to IT to make those decisions. So I might end up making that fact available to the general population without IRB approval because the governance group has reviewed the data and decided the risk is low enough that they're willing to release that field. So when I say the 10-character limit, that's for anything the governance group has not reviewed. But the goal over the course of the year is to have your governance group review all of this data. You want to maximize the data you can make available in the warehouse without people having to go to the IRB just to get permission even to look at it. But that's a constant struggle in most organizations. And if you let that debate go on too long, you'll go live in December with 90% of your facts unavailable to 99% of your users. And that you do not want to have happen as you go through. You also want to have the window of opportunity as wide open as possible as you develop the warehouse. I've seen projects go live where they didn't have any users, and that's a very bad thing. Then you don't have any user voice of the customer coming in. But I've also seen warehouses go live with the wrong users. It's frustrating to build a warehouse in a year, and after a year, all you can build is the same queries the same users did on the old systems. You know, there's to a certain extent, the ability to run things in parallel and show that the new warehouse creates the same answers as any old reporting system, there's value to that, and it helps build confidence in the user community. So you have to do some of it. But if that's all you do, if all you do is load in ADT data for the last couple of years with a bunch of orders, you're going to have people writing queries, and half the time you'll hear them mumbling under their breath, I could do this under the old system. Why'd we spend a year building this? So let the window be open. Look for novel ways to use the data that you're loading, increasingly novel ways to do it. So the day you go live, you'll have users writing queries and getting results that they could not have gotten from any existing database or reporting system in your environment. That's how you generate the excitement. If all you do is give them another database to run the same monthly census data that they get every day from the system they've already got, you'll have a nice automated warehouse, but you won't have the kind of enthusiasm necessary to maintain the pace as they go through. And that's really, really important. So those last two bullets, just make sure you're dealing with your governance issues. You won't be able to show anything. Make sure you've got a novel community doing novel queries, or people will lose interest fairly, fairly quickly. So there's a lot of issues inside and outside the project. That's really what I wanted to cover. I'm going to take some questions. So there's a microphone here if you want to give me some questions. Just in terms of just a little overhead, just so you know, immediately after this session, I'm going to go over to the networking lounge next door, and I'm going to take some questions from the virtual audience who may not be having their questions here. So I won't be around the presentation here long immediately after because I am going to go next door. About an hour after the presentation, though, I will be downstairs in the Knowledge Center, down in the HIMSS Knowledge Center. So if you have questions there, you haven't gotten in this session, or just have questions about the databases or the designs beyond this presentation, I'll be available downstairs a little later to answer more questions. And then after that, I'll be available in our university booth down on the ground floor. If you haven't been down the bowels of the hallways downstairs, and we'll be down there for a little bit, too. So let's take a few questions now while we have some time.
Sure. Please come up to one of the microphones here. Give us your name and please address a question. And for our virtual attendees, please ask your questions through the chat feature that you have.
Good morning. Great presentation. Melinda Kulsa from Dignity Health in California. So you mentioned at the very outset that designing a data warehouse to be truly useful brings in multiple kinds of data from myriads of sources. And I'm not gainsaying it that in many healthcare systems there are, the field is littered with legacy applications across the spectrum, some bought off the shelf, some made in-house, and any variation in between. How important it is to develop a rigorous process for data normalization so you're comparing apples to apples in the first place? And B, is there a process or an application or a group that you have worked with that does this and still retains the data fidelity that if I measured the patient arrival times to the ED, once the data goes through the process, it's still retains a modicum of that's what's being measured?
Good question. The fact that you have so many systems in-house, you're bringing data from a lot of systems. Some of them could be homegrown systems running on some researcher's server under their desk, where they've got almost no rigor built into the data that they're capturing. So knowing that that kind of activity is going to happen, the first rule of warehousing is to load the data with a very high fidelity to your source. No matter how sloppy the data is in the source, I don't change it when I bring it into the warehouse. So at some point, there is an accurate representation in the data warehouse of the precise data element as it was brought in from a source system. Okay, and that includes making sure that for every fact in the warehouse, I know where it came from and when. So traceability of the data back to the source is something you want to supply in the design. In the generic design that we build, we actually have dimensions specifically to look at where did the data come from. You also want to measure data quality as it comes in. It's not uncommon, again, based on input from your governance group to prioritize it, to store additional facts in the warehouse that represent a cleaned up version of the data that was brought in from the original source. So again, I never overlay or replace the original data element, but it is possible to have data elements that come in incorrect. A common example is you'll have your med administration system where you're given two data columns in your source. One is the unit of dosage, and the other is the amount of dosage. So the intent being that you had 5 milligrams comes through in two fields, a 5 and a milligram. But it rarely comes through that way in about half the cases. So instead, the units column is blank, and the units value column says 5 milligrams, which to a person looking at an EMR screen doesn't offer any confusion at all. But to a discrete data element in a data warehouse, that creates problems. You can't run any kind of analytics on that that's dependent upon that value being truly numeric. So typically what we'll do is we'll load that data in as 5 milligrams. Normally that fact would point to the unit of measure dimensions for milligrams and have just the number 5 in it. But instead the fact says 5 milligrams, and the unit it points to is called unexpected text, so that you won't accidentally pull that value into a numeric calculation. Now, working with the governance group, you can ask them to review those cases. Now, if it rarely happens, you probably won't. But if you've got hundreds of thousands of such facts in the warehouse, the governance group might get involved. And they'll profile the data and see, yeah, sure enough, most often when it's unexpected text, it's a number followed by what should have been the unit of measure. So they'll authorize us in the ETL to split that value and put another fact. We're not replacing the first one. We put another replacement fact in that has a 5 in the value column, and the unit of measure actually says milligrams. So we do, in fact, clean up and process the data in the warehouse, but never to the point of discarding the old data. Someone that wants to match the data in the warehouse against their source system would run queries looking at the original facts as opposed to the quality scrubbed facts that supersede that data as it loads in. But again, it's very, very important that those of us who are in IT do not make those kinds of decisions. They need to be authorized and approved by your governance committee. Okay? But people do that.
Okay. We're going to take a question from our virtual audience.
Hi. Sergio from our virtual team wants to know, what teams are left after the project ends, and what team members might be needed for data warehouse maintenance and expansion?
Wow, that's a great question. The team, the support team pretty much stays the same, and the project team pretty much stays the same. So addressing the issue of the team, like I tried to allude earlier, the first year, the implementation of the warehouse, hopefully, is just the first stage of what will be an ongoing basis. So preferably, Sergio, I would not disband the team at all. If possible, keep this as a fairly permanent team. Because as soon as release 1 goes in, people are going to start talking about release 1.1. And if you've successfully built your governance group and you've successfully built a novel community, by that second spring after the system goes live, you'll have people clamoring to say, load my data, what can I do? So the reality is, if you're successful at this, you will never be able to disband the warehouse team. You will shift resources. There will be less ETL development work going on because the standard paradigm is really a finished model. We're not in a mode where to load another data set, we have to write more ETL. After the first year, you won't be writing ETL at all anymore. You'll simply be sourcing data set into the generic ETL pipe that's provided. But the big part of doing a warehouse is the analytical work, to understand the sources, to work with the governance team, to draw that boundary between historical loads and prospective loads, to work on the interoperability of new data and how does it map to old data. The analytical task never gets any smaller, and that's the bulk of what the development team does the first year. So the second year on, you might trim back some of your ETL resources a little bit, put in even more analytical resources. It's really a question of how fast the governance group wants the implementations to go. With the first release in, you start to see a mode where you can run things in parallel. If you have more analysts the second year, you can, in fact, load more data, because the bottleneck at that point is just your ability to analyze the sources and make the data available to the generic ETL. But for the most part, it's more or less the same resource going forward into year 2 and 3 and 4 as things move.
Okay. We have another question.
Yeah. Hi, Anthony D'Angelo. In your travels and in your experience, have you used any of these predefined data models that merge that clinical and financial world together? Have you used any of them? Have you considered them? What are your thoughts?
It's a fair question. I'll be the first to admit I'm relatively uninformed in all the things that are out there today. This is such a growing field. There are people who have prepackaged models that they'll bring in. In the research community, you've got things like I2B2, which I consider a little primitive, but it definitely enters the ballpark at that point. Increasingly, you're seeing people start to move this kind of warehousing functionality and ETL into the cloud. I'm not against those kinds of solutions. If anything, what I've learned over the years is that the database and ETL piece really are the small part. And once they're a small part, outsourcing them is a potential candidate. Even with those kinds of solutions, I would imagine the first major implementation is still going to take a year, because the big bottleneck is the analysis of your source data. Hopefully a year or two from now, we'll be able to talk and say we've so standardized the analysis that even that is becoming a common component. But that's still a big issue for a lot of organizations. I think the whole HIE movement is forcing us to understand our data better, to model our data better, to be able to interoperate it with other environments. So perhaps a year or two from now, the year project will scrunch down to a few months. But I think for now, even if you go with outside sources, I know there's lots of companies doing this, and I'm sure most of them are here in the exhibit hall, I would imagine that you can get very, very good results there. The cost effectiveness of that would be based upon your IT culture, your level of resources. But I've worked with organizations that internally don't really have the IT horsepower to do this themselves. So those sites are usually better going to an outside company that can bring them that piece. But again, you can't outsource the analysis and understanding of your data. Even if you could, I wouldn't recommend it, because that's one of the biggest values of doing the project. You'll know your data better than you ever have in the past. So I think we are moving in that direction. The warehouse itself is becoming a commodity utility. And that wouldn't have been true even just a couple of years ago.
We're going to take another question from our virtual audience.
Okay, Teresa has a question. A number of vendors offer data models which are then tweaked for the organization's needs. She would like to know what advantages or disadvantages are there in starting with an existing model versus investing in resources designed from scratch?
Well, the buy-or-build approach, IT has been dealing with that for many, many years. So you've got all the classic advantages and disadvantages of buying a model. I would say the advantage or disadvantage is, again, based on your organizational culture. Do you have the internal horsepower to do this yourself? I find that buying a package, buying an outside model, buying any application, requires a level of analysis of your requirements that in the data warehousing world represents most of the work anyway. In this one-year effort, I would say 60 or 70 or more percent of your effort is going to go into identifying your requirements and pinning down your data to the point where it almost doesn't matter which external model you want. My concern with the external models is many of them are built based on a view of legacy data that, unfortunately, when I implement them, make my warehouse look like it contains data from all my systems. And that's not what I want. I want to get a feel for what happened to the patient when I look at the warehouse. So the ins and outs are largely those of buy or build. In my view, the model is so standardized that there's really nothing to buy. I mean, people who are out there selling these data models, I'm all for free trade. But the reality is the model we should be building in these warehouses has been fairly standard now for a decade or more in terms of how to lay out a set of fact tables, how to do the normalized dimensions around them. There isn't a lot of database modeling that needs to be done. So when you're buying a model, you're often buying someone else's interpretation of your clinical data, and you can kill yourself trying to make your data fit that model if you're not careful. So I would say if you're an organization that's comfortable working with vendors, you're used to bringing in contractors, looking at your data, there's no reason not to go down that path if you're comfortable with it. I would just watch out that you're not overbuying. I don't want the database to look like a clinical warehouse. I've developed data warehouses in the healthcare sector. I've developed them in the commercial and industrial sectors. The structure of the database is completely independent of the sector I'm working in. I said structure. The content of the dimensions can be dramatically different. But if the database that you're buying looks like a healthcare data warehouse exclusively with lots of tables and facts related to healthcare, you'll probably get in trouble eventually. Because healthcare is a lot of clinical data, but eventually it's purchasing, it's finance, it's HR, it's marketing, it's customer service. It's all the standard non-healthcare dimensions as well. So if you lock yourself into a model that looks like it's tailored to healthcare, it's only a question of time before you will regret that decision, because you won't just want to see how many times we give metformin to a patient. We're going to see what kind of batches and lots we loaded in through our purchasing system and what prices we acquire it at. And you're not going to be able to bring some of that logistical type data into a clinically oriented warehouse. So the warehouse should be very, very agnostic related to what it stores. Our use of it should be very patient-centric and healthcare-centric, but the model in and of itself. So if you choose to look at an outside model, don't limit what you look to only people marketing to the healthcare sector. A non-healthcare sector model that is much more flexible than others on the market might be the better solution. The warning I'd throw out is that the people who are in the non-healthcare sector have never heard of HIPAA. So you run into that wall fairly quickly if you're not careful. But in terms of content of the warehouse, there are lots of opportunities out there. And I would encourage you, as you do your analysis and write your requirements, look at all the options. There's no reason to go with any particular solution in-house. Just maintain that your real long-term goal is the expansion and the flexibility of the model, not its rigidness and suitability for the data you're looking at today. Okay?
We have another question from our audience here.
Good morning. Larry Smith is my name. You addressed the question earlier from the gentleman about normalizing data across multiple data sources. Could you address the question again specific to the challenge of integrating key data such as patient, making sure you have the same patient information across multiple sources?
That's a real challenge. Identifying your patients, if you bring in lots of patients, okay, so let's assume I've got an HIE, for instance, and I'm pulling in data for patients that are at the hospital down the street, or I've got patients walking in the door who I'm not recognizing in my own EMR as the same patient. They're going to end up in the warehouse as separate patients. Identifying who a patient is, okay, knowing I'm looking at the right patient, to me, speaking from my expertise, that's an issue for the system of record. Okay, that's a matter of the clinical record of the way we treat our patients. I don't consider it the job of the warehouse to figure that out and make any kind of changes. So if I've got a patient who's in my EMR five times, they're going to be in my warehouse five times. Now, I do recommend that one of the key outputs of a data warehouse are data quality hypotheses. So I can use the warehouse to query patients and come up with a list of those that we hypothesize would be subject to a patient merge, which, again, should go back through the clinical process. The decision needs to be made in the system of record. The only time I would ever merge them in the warehouse is if I actually receive an ADT A34 message from the EMR saying merge these patients. It's just too risky otherwise. But that works in-house. The question for outside patients like an HIE, again, that's the strategy of the system of record. To the extent that we all choose to participate in HIEs, we're going to have data feeds and data flows coming from an outside environment. We have to integrate into our environment. Again, my recommendation is don't rely on the warehouse to do that kind of integration. So to the extent that we're loading data into a local repository or feeding it into our EMR, again, the issue is the clinical community prepared to claim that two patients are, in fact, the same? I know that's a very tough decision. I've never had to make the decision myself, but to the extent that we have to be in the warehouse be able to undo an A34, that would be an indication to me that they're being done sometimes prematurely or on too little information. So I don't mean to duck your question, but I don't think it's a data warehousing question. And that happens a lot. We've got the interoperability of elements. And I take the same attitude in every dimension of the warehouse. We talk a lot about merging patients, but it's not uncommon to have sources being fed into the warehouse that are talking about the same drug, but they've identified them differently in their different sources. So my drug master has certain drug codes for all my anesthesia drugs, but my surgical anesthesia systems have their own homegrown tables where they've got completely different codes for that. So when I look at that data coming through into the warehouse, unless someone in a position of governance tells me that drug 123 from the anesthesia system is really ABC in the pharmacy system, I'm not going to be able to connect those facts in the warehouse. All the data will be there. And again, in terms of developing hypotheses, sometimes I can do natural language matches on their descriptions. I can look at the kinds of procedures they're associated with. I can look at which clinical specialties tend to use these drugs. And I can come up with such a strong correlation that I'm able to produce a query that says, I think these two drugs are the same drug. But again, in the warehouse, beyond posing the hypothesis, I'm never going to act on it. I'm always going to kick that back to some governance group, my data owners. I'll kick it back to the pharmacist. I'll kick it back to the anesthesiologist. So you two get together, because if they're the same, we can integrate them in the warehouse, and you'll get a much more robust query environment. So that ability to create data administration hypotheses, I think, is one of the key roles of a data warehouse. One of the biggest bangs you'll get out of it in the first year. A lot of the work once you've got your warehouse live, most of your major results in the first few months of use are going to be users clarifying just how messy and horrible our data really is. That's perhaps a loss for the institution, but it's a major victory for data warehousing. And we suddenly have a tool that makes it much easier to diagnose these very kinds of problems and look for those kinds of opportunities. So.
Okay, we're going to go to another question from our virtual audience.
This is from Robert. He would like to know, at what phase did you do data cleansing?
That's a good question. Pretty much never. Like I said, the data cleansing depends on your definition of data cleansing. There's a certain element of cleansing that has to be done, but my philosophy on warehousing is what I call suspend in place. Many data warehouses talk in terms of bringing in data that might be messy or might be rejected by a transaction. A common one would be EMRs that allow you to enter body temperatures in Fahrenheit but don't require you to put in the decimal place. So a lot of people have a 986 degree Fahrenheit or body temperature. That's something you would think needs to be cleansed as it gets brought into the warehouse. That's a good example. The milligrams example I used a minute ago would be examples of where you might want to cleanse the data. But be cautious. I do not cleanse that data prior to it coming into the warehouse. Because then I lose the continuity of looking at an element of the warehouse and knowing that if I go back to the source, I will see the same thing. So I bring in that 986 degree temperature. I store it in my fact table. I store it as Fahrenheit because it's a legitimate Fahrenheit. But I'll store in my quality dimension that this value exceeded the normal range for that particular fact type. And if it almost never happens, no one ever really looks at it. But to the extent that it starts to happen a lot, I go back to my governance group. I say, what do you want me to do about this? And they might authorize me to add a secondary cleansed fact that when the oral temperature in Fahrenheit is greater than 950, go ahead and store a version of it with a decimal place. And I'll go ahead and put that in, and I'll make it available to my user community. But it's always both. It's never either or. I always have the original fact. So the cleansing takes place inside the warehouse. And that's very different than if you're reading the literature or textbooks related to data modeling. In industry, we cleanse the data before we bring it into the warehouse. If it's not clean, we suspend it. It doesn't come into the warehouse at all. And someone in the morning will look at the suspense file and figure out what to fix. And if 1 or 2% of our data elements are there, I've got a small army of people cleaning up data. Well, in healthcare, if I tried to do that every morning, 90% of yesterday's data would be sitting in suspense. And how many of you have time sit down and clean up that data in the morning? So in healthcare, the paradigm is bring the data in no matter what, so it's in the warehouse, and deal with it there. Again, using data administration queries to look for the most common quality problems we see in the data as we bring it in. It could be missing values that were required but empty. It could be keys that were missing. And sometimes it's the key that's missing. The first place I see a physician in a warehouse is in a med order. So when you hire a physician, the first thing you make sure they can do is go on the floor and work. And eventually the credentialing system catches up. So eventually I'm told, yes, this person's a doctor. But I trust the EMR. If it says this doctor ordered this drug, I'll take their word for it, even though I've never heard of the doctor. So I'll store the doctor in the database as an orphan, which can be dangerous if your query is based on quantifying drug use by clinical specialty, because I've got a physician now that's using a drug, and I have no idea what their clinical specialty is until the master data catches up at the end of the month from the credentialing system. So I've always got a series of data elements in the warehouse that are kind of in flux. Either they're syntactically incorrect, or they don't match up operationally with other data sources that have to be synchronized, or I lack a semantic awareness of what they're trying to tell me. I'm always going to have this cloud of quality issues in my data, and the warehouse is the perfect place to diagnose and deal with those issues.
Okay. We have time for one last question. Gentleman right here.
Paul Shaven, MedStar Health. So who do you put on your data governance committee or committees?
Oh, that's a great question. Who's on the data governance committee? I don't think I mentioned that. Like I said, fairly senior people. I want them to be clinicians very often. Chief medical officer is a good candidate. Your HIPAA compliance person is a good candidate. If you're storing finance data, your CFO is a good candidate, but only if you're storing finance data. Head of nursing is a good candidate for that. If you're in an academic or medical center, you probably want someone associated with your school of medicine, someone from your research committee. I want the IRB represented. Probably someone representing the major data sources that tend to have problems. So someone from the nursing informatics group should probably be represented, but typically C-suite representation, not IT representation. As an IT person, I attend governance group meetings, but I don't want a vote in them.
But they're not going to be cleaning up the data like
this. No, they're not.
So they authorize the people that do?
Yeah, they authorize. Think of it as a governance structure, much like our quality committees. A quality committee oversees all of our quality as an organization, but they don't get personally involved in every little investigation. So the governance group will typically kick off, depending upon what your culture is for organizing. If you're a Six Sigma organization, the governance group would charter Six Sigma project teams to go look into specific issues. It's a good idea for each major category of data to know who your data owners are around the organization. So from a data warehousing standpoint, I want to know who to go to in nursing if I have a nursing informatics question. Who do I go to in pharmacy if I've got a question? Who do I go in the lab? So very often the governance group will defer the investigation to the data owners that have been assigned. So the data governance is more than a group of six people sitting around a table. It's an infrastructure for informatic decision making that should go on. And it shouldn't just be a data warehousing governance group. It really should be an informatics governance group, because a lot of these issues trickle back upstream to your sources. And the best place to correct a lot of these problems is in the sources. We often fix it in the warehouse because someone will say, well, we can't add that edit, or we can't do that back in our source, or it would take a year or two, so let's just fix it in the warehouse. But you want fairly senior people at the top of that tree.
Okay, unfortunately, we have to close this session for today. It's been an awesome presentation, Dr. Beal. I know there's going to be more questions and follow-ups.